Good afternoon. It's kind of, she says I should stay on time. A working extension in 15 minutes is just for introduction. So I'll try to stay on time. Little bit of background about this study. This study is kind of a study that's been going on. It's over 20 years, but it had no nutrient component to it. It was strictly an irrigation trial. So what they look at is different rates of irrigation. So we have different irrigation levels. So when I came on board a year ago, I looked at the yields and felt like something ain't right here. We're not making the yields ain't high enough. We should be a lot higher on the full irrigation. So we decided there must be something limiting the yields. And since my background is fertility and I sit the way I think of stuff, if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail, so it must be a fertility problem. So that's where I started from with this study. So let's call it a diagnostic approach, kind of. So I like to start with this saying. There is an old saying that appears in almost all management textbooks that says there is no management without measurements. If you can measure it, you can manage it. And a lot of times in soil testing and our plant analysis, poor correlation is what leads to low confidence in measurements. So farmers are reluctant to do these tests because they just have low confidence in them. And so that's something we want to improve on. So in terms of monitoring nutrients, I like to make this statement. I make this statement a lot in my extension talks. Soil and plant testing not only show weaknesses, but do also show the strength in our systems. A lot of times when we think of plant analysis and soil analysis, we're always trying to find a problem. We don't try to use it to see how well we're doing. It's always a problem. But it can be used just to tell us how well we're doing as well. And so I see any type of testing and plant and monitoring should be, and these are some of the criteria, should be reliable. That means it should follow a regular schedule. Two, it should be consistent, follow the same sampling procedure. And three, it should be frequent, done often enough to observe trends. And so I kind of tell my farmers to do this, and I have a lot of farmers, they tend to go to a different lab every year, and I always try to advise them against that. So what's my goal from this project? One is to increase confidence, because if I increase confidence, that could increase the amount of testing that producers will do in terms of plant and soil analysis. So my objective kind of started with a detective type approach, and you guys are familiar with Columba. So it was to identify toxicity or any deficiency that could be limiting corn yield under irrigation in western Kansas. So our approach is we had 5 irrigation levels, and we applied 1 inch every 4 days, 1 inch every 6 days, 1 inch every 8 days, 1 inch every 10 days, 1 inch every 12 days, as well as a dryland treatment. Our measurement, we kind of took a barrage of soil nutrient analysis, barrage of plant nutrients analysis. We also took plant health, measuring NDVI, and then we took yield on harvest, 2 center rows of 10 feet each. Bear in mind, I inherited this study, so I didn't have much control of a lot of things other than take samples. So the procedure they had, they have a decalvarge. They planted around 32,000 seeds per acre. It was planted May 10, 2016, and May 9, 2017. They put on a lot of nitrogen, 220 pounds of N per acre, and phosphorus, a lot of phosphorus. And they also, when I came on board in 2016, they side-dressed iron. I didn't think it was a good idea, but they did. And weed control, I won't go through all that, but we had both pre- and post-weed control. So this is kind of the study design. So we have all 6 treatments randomized in different replications. It was under a linear system, and so we're able to really apply these irrigation at the different intervals. In terms of seasonal water input in 2016, we had a wet year in western Kansas. That's unusual, but we did. Then it kind of shut off in July. So we had a lot of rain, then it shut off in July, and then we kind of started our irrigation in July. And so most of our irrigation actually went on in August. That's when we really was able to implement those different treatments. So looking at our soil analysis, and I know I have a bunch of people here have more experience than I do. One, some of the things that stand out to me, one was the magnesium levels. And that was surprising to me, finding that the magnesium level actually, it decreases with as you move to a dry land situation. That I find that pretty odd, and still trying to get somebody to explain that to me. So hopefully somebody here will be able to do that for me. Another nutrients that stand out was sulfur. We kind of find sulfur was kind of borderline, which we weren't kind of expecting, but that those just from the soil analysis, these were things that kind of jumped out at us. From the plant analysis, looking at our plant analysis, again, first thing we look at was the magnesium because we felt that was important from what we saw from the soil test. But in terms of plant analysis, it was pretty okay. Sulfur was borderline in terms of the sufficiency levels. But then the next nutrients that stand out to us was the iron and the manganese levels. What we found there is when you look at your sufficiency levels, they look okay. But when you search the literature, it tells us that the manganese concentration should pretty much not be higher than the iron levels. So we started to look into that a little more because that was a concern for us, the iron and the manganese levels. Looking at our yields, there was no difference in yield amongst the irrigation treatment, but there was a significant difference with the dry land. So our question is, what's eating our corn yield? So what we did was we did correlation, simple linear regression between all the nutrients and trying to figure out which one is actually eating our lunch there for yield. What we found was the iron. We did find that a significant relationship that as iron levels pretty much yield increased with increased concentration of iron. But what we also found is that it actually much higher significant levels was found with the iron and the manganese ratio. We did find that yield tend to increase much significant relationship between the ratios than just the iron by itself. So the first thing we asked, what do we really know about iron and manganese? So now we're trying to figure this out. We know that availability is influenced similarly by cultural factors. So increase in pH becomes acidic or less available as the pH becomes alkaline. We also know that plant content of iron and manganese is best monitored by plant analysis. That may be questionable for iron. Iron, we know what its function is, its synthesis of chlorophyll. And we know that the manganese is mostly involved in hydrolysis of water and hence to provide the oxygen to evolution. And we know they are essential micronutrients. So we started what we know. Now we search the literature and say, what does it say? We found that back in 1942, Sovers and Shives says iron and manganese involves competition for absorption. So both are competing for absorption. So that's got to give us a little clearer picture. The literature also suggests that iron and manganese ratio should be between 1 and 2.5, irrespective of concentration in the tissue for optimum yield. Greater than 2.5 will result in manganese deficiency, and lower than 1 results in iron deficiency. So we're starting to get a little clearer picture of what we're seeing. With more recent work that they looked at some genetic work screening the metal tolerance of protein 8 expression, they found that iron deficiency strongly induced a genetic component, I'm not a geneticist, but a gene, expression was strongly induced on low iron as well as high manganese medium in iridopsis. So they started to find it from a genetic component, both of these, the antagonistic relationship, they're actually seeing it probably more, could be more of a genetic factor in some plants. And looking at some work closer to home in Kansas, Chad Godsey did some work in 2003, and he found that iron deficiency in corn can reduce yield as much as 20%, and iron sulfate was found to be the most consistent treatment for correcting iron deficiency in corn. So while we may have an issue, we do have a pretty ready available solution. So what we did in 2017, same studies, what we decided to do is we're going to select about a 3 meters by 27 meter plot in each of the treatments, and we broadcast iron sulfate plus a humic product. The idea there was, initially, we wanted to put it in furrow, but we didn't have the equipment to do it. That's why the rate was so low, because we already was set up to do in furrow. So we end up just broadcasting it. And bear in mind, the work in western Kansas shows we needed around 80 pounds per acre for us to really get a response, so we weren't even expecting any response from this Lorette. But looking up back again, looking at our soil analysis, we saw the exact same trend with magnesium again. So I'm still waiting for trying to find an explanation. And then our sulfur issue kind of showed up much stronger here, where we're seeing that sulfur, lower levels of sulfur being an issue there. In terms of plant analysis, now we're looking at both with iron and without iron. If we look at what we found at the higher irrigation levels, we're able to increase that iron content in that plant. But not just increase iron content, but interestingly, we decrease the manganese concentration. So even at those low rates, we're seeing an increase in the iron, and we're actually decreasing that manganese concentration, which we found to be pretty interesting. And looking at it from the ratio standpoint, looking at the ratios, like in 2017, we see that in the soil, in 2016, we had much higher ratio in the soil. In 2017, we saw much lower ratios in the soil. And that actually was now also represented in our plant analysis, where we saw much higher ratios in 2016. In 2017, looking at our iron, with iron, without iron, we're seeing those ratios going down as well, comparably with what we're seeing in the soil. So, and bear in mind, we still didn't feel we alleviate our iron deficiency issues, because based on the literature, you need to be above one based on your iron ratio. And we still was below that one. So we're looking for, I don't have the yield data, so we're looking forward to see what that's going to look like this year. The take home is iron deficiency in corn and high pH soils could be a hidden deficiency limiting our yield in western Kansas. On plant analysis, somewhat confirms as a good tool for us to monitor these micronutrients, looking at it from the ratio standpoint. And we also found that soil and plant testing used together can be an excellent tool in terms of diagnosing these problems. And with that, I'll take any questions. And I'm an extension guy, and I look like I got done before 12 minutes. Can you repeat that question for me, please?
Have you looked at your magnesium and sulfur concentration in your irrigation water?
The question is, have I looked at my manganese or magnesium? Magnesium concentration as well as sulfur in terms of the irrigation water. And yes, we have done that. And that's why we're really surprised that we're seeing sulfur, actually low levels of sulfur, based on the amount of sulfur that's available in our irrigation water. So we're really surprised at our sulfur levels, because that's why they haven't been putting sulfur on, because the assumption is we should be getting enough sulfur from the irrigation water. In terms of the magnesium, we have not done that. That is the question is in terms of the correlations with the R square values are really low.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with that, but of all the nutrients that we looked at, that was the only one that we found that we see any significance that we could actually look at in all the other nutrients were pretty much was no relationships. That's the only one that indication of a relationship. We know it's a far stretch, which is you only explain it 16% of the variability, but it's actually giving us a start to look at this new, because we know it's been an issue. So for us to look and see how, if we can address this issue, how much yield, because it's not, most farmers are not really concerned about it because they don't really see the yield loss as they would see with sorghum. So in corn, iron deficiency of corn is tend to be ignored. But we still, the work that was done in 2003 was showing at least a 20% yield difference. And so that's where we finding this allows us to now to start to take another step, to start looking at, can we put iron on and see how that will impact our yields? So that's the kind of where we're going with that. The question is, did we see the iron deficiency symptoms in any of our fields? Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. So what I'm actually doing, working in extension, I now have a lot of farmers that will send me their plant analysis. And I just look at those ratios, and I would call them up, and they would say to me, and I say, did you have iron chlorosis on this field? And they're like, oh, yes, I had it early. How you know that? And I'm just looking at the plant analysis. And so my long-term goal is to do a survey with my farmers and kind of get a much more detailed database to really start to document and see if this is really an issue. Okay. Thank you very much.